This conference is being recorded.
And sound the horn, the trumpet in Zion, sound an alarm. And I'm your host in the Royal Priesthood Bible Prayer Fellowship Room tonight, along with Elijah. And we have a very special guest coming in with us tonight, all the way from Italy via the USA. And we are thankful tonight and just excited about the broadcast tonight. We believe that we're going to have a great show. So we bid you greetings to those of you in our international audience and BBS Radio. We say Hotep and Shalom unto you and to those of you who are in the royal priesthood room tonight. You're in for a treat. I'm thankful this week, March in particular, but this week especially, I've been offering up incense and paying homage and oblations and pouring oblations to my ancestors, and both on all sides, my European ancestors, my African ancestors, and my indigenous American ancestors this week and this month. And I'm in a thankful place right now, and I'm just thankful for humanity as a whole. I have to be, because so many different things are running through my veins, so many different genetic contributions, I should say. So I'm thankful. And we have a very, very special guest who is 25 years into study, into our subject matter, into the Bible and its meanings and hidden meanings. He is a student of one of the men who taught me, who just angered me to no degree after 40 years of study, Bill Donahue. And Bill Donahue is probably perhaps the reason and cause of my awakening to the degree. But as I've said so many times in previous broadcasts, he angered me to no limits in terms of some of the things that he said. But the truth that he spoke had tenets in it and hooks that kept me coming back to listen to more. So having said that, I am especially thankful tonight for Giovanni Carlo, who is our special guest tonight. And I think he's in the room. Mr. Carlo, Brother Carlo, are you there?
Oh, yes, I'm here. How you doing?
Hey, man, I am excellent. Thank you for asking. And I'm just excited about the fact that we've shared teachers for the last 5 years. Of course, you have been around in this subject matter for 20 years prior to me, two decades. You have been. So I'm just excited about what you have to say tonight. I think the audience is going to be really enlightened and lifted by your insight and the depth of understanding that you have been granted. So without any further ado, Eladia, I'd like to just bring him on. What do you say?
I would agree with you. I'm excited, too. I want to hear what the gentleman has to say.
Oh, wow. You're in for a treat. So
I think so.
We're going to start out, I guess. I just gave him free reins, but I guess, you know, talking about the Bible being a mysterious book, and the Bible itself says that it is a book of mysteries, dark sayings. It says that it is a book of parables. It is a book of riddles. It is a book of fables. And it is a book of allegories. It really says that, people. Listen, so the people who wrote it never intended for us to take it literally, because as one of my other teachers states, all people tell stories. There's nothing wrong with a story as long as you are clear, Dr. John Henry Clark says, that you are telling a story. So, Giovanni, with that being said, is that a good place for you to take off and just talk to us tonight about the Bible and some of the things that are in it? Give us a few windows to look through to give us an example of what I just said.
Well, sure. You know, what you just said is perfect. Kind of beat me to it.
Okay.
I'm sitting here eating blackberries. I got my spring water. I'm relaxing, and I appreciate that you had me on. It's good that I can express my views and see if I can open up some minds out there, open up some third eyes. It would be nice.
Yes, it would.
I've done a few of these shows before, with like in the past 6 years, so I'm not new to this. So I'm very comfortable with you guys. I'd like to start off by quoting something from Buddha, if you don't mind. It's a quote that I've always used many times for people who followed me on Facebook and in person throughout the years. And he said, "Do not believe in anything simply because you have heard it. Do not believe in anything simply because it is spoken and rumored by many. Do not believe in anything because it is found written in your religious books. Do not believe in anything merely on the authority of your teachers and elders. Do not believe in traditions because they have been handed down for many generations. But after observation and analysis, when you find anything that agrees with reason and is conducive to the good and benefit of one and all, then accept it and live up to it." And I think this is a good opening for Buddha, for this quote, and for the things that we're going to talk about tonight. Because I don't want anybody to believe in anything that I say. I don't want anybody to accept what I say as Bible, as fact. Because you should not do that. You should not listen to your religious teachers. You should not listen to anybody. But what you should do is keep an open mind to all points of view and let your inner self tell you what is truth. And like Buddha said, when you find something that agrees with reason and is conducive to the benefit of all, then you should follow it. And I think this is very important. So I'm not here to force anybody to believe what I believe or to make people agree with me. I'm simply trying to open their hearts and minds to logic, to what the Bible is all about. So is that a good
start? And interestingly enough, the Jesus Christ of the Bible quotes Buddha.
Oh, the entire Bible, after many years of research, I found out that the entire Bible is not Jewish. It's not Christian. It's not even Western. The Bible is Eastern mysticism. It's Buddhist. It's Hindu. It's totally plagiarized material from the East. And the Christian church and Judaism and Zionism, they have completely plagiarized the entire thing. and made it their own and manipulated it and changed it and made it literal. And by making it literal, they have been able to attain much power, and most importantly, they have gotten the state of Israel because of it. Because they have brainwashed the masses and have made people think that the Bible is a history book, and it's about a physical Messiah, that it's about a physical Israel in Palestine, and this is what it's not about. It has nothing to do with geopolitics. It's got nothing to do with anything external. It has to do with the workings of inner consciousness and what happens to us during the practice of meditation, our glands, our energy, our chakras. And it's done in allegory. This is how the ancient mystics wrote. They made fairy tale stories, epics. They made mythology, and they hid all the truth in these mythologies. Only because they never talked at face value. They never wrote literally. This was their way for thousands of years. They made up mythological fairy tale stories and hid the esoteric wisdom in them. They never got to the point. Nothing was at face value. They did this so people who are ready to understand would use their third eye and decipher the wisdom for themselves when people were ready to walk the path. And it's not something that's easy to find. You know. I mean, you read these stories, the Western mind reads these stories and they think they're literal because they were never taught about allegory. They were never taught about metaphor and symbolism and mythology. So you can't really blame them. You can't really judge them for not understanding because they were never told. They were never taught. But, you know, at any given time, there's a few people on this planet who, for some reason, open up based on past lives and incarnations, and they're able to see it. They're able to question. The Bible was never intended to be a historical document. Based on my research, I mean, it's just there as plain as day. All the characters in the Bible are pure fiction, except for a few kings and governors that were mentioned and some real historical places that were sometimes used in the storyline. I would say about 98% of the Bible is mythology. Just like the Kabbalah.
And you know, Giovanni, you know, we never stopped to even question where are the archaeological remains of the characters of the Bible. We don't have any bones of any person, major figure.
They've never found anything. They've never found anything. The archaeologists are so full of beans. Just because they find some rubble somewhere in Palestine or in Syria, they say it's Sodom and Gomorrah. They say it's Jericho. This is absolutely ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
May I interject something there? What would you say to all these ossuaries that supposedly the boxes that the bones go in Israel? What would you say to that?
The bone. What do you mean the bones?
These boxes, they call them ossuaries, don't they? That they claim had contained the dried up bones of all of these biblical characters.
Well, how do we know this?
We don't.
It's laughable. It's laughable. It's just totally laughable. I mean, how could a sea open up? How could a sea open up? I mean, come on, we're all mature individuals. We're supposed to be. It's 2016. We're supposed to be a human race. We're all mature individuals. I mean, these stories are not real. I mean, Eve never talked to a snake in a tree. I never heard of a snake that talks. I don't think anybody ever had a conversation with a snake in a tree. So, I mean, it's just unbelievable how the evangelicals the right-wing evangelical Christians actually take this whole entire Bible literally, and I just don't understand where they're coming from. Many of them are doctors and lawyers and physicists and scientists and professional people of every profession, but yet they take the Bible as something literal. And you go on Trinity Broadcasting Network, you go on TBN, and they constantly say this all the time. You know, they think that Adam and Eve walked around and, you know, with no clothes on, and they ate an apple, and they had a conversation with a snake, and, you know, Samson grew his hair, and he got strong, and, you know, it's Lot's wife turned around, and she turned to salt. I mean, these things are all mythologies. And if you really research into it, these stories come from the Epic of Gilgamesh. They come from Mesopotamia. They come from Samaria. They come from ancient Egypt. These stories are not unique to Christianity. They're not unique to Judaism. This is all plagiarized material. But you have to look into it. You have to study it. You have to research it. And it's all there, especially when you have the Internet now. I mean, there's no excuses for born-again evangelical Christians to take the Bible literally. All they got to do is go on the Internet now, and they don't even have to go to a library. They can do all the research on Google. It's all there, right in front of them, right in their hands, to find
out
that the Bible is all Mesopotamian, ancient Egyptian, Eastern.
Yes, even including the Virgin birth, going back to the Chronicles of Alexandria there in Egypt, and the whole story about Anubis or the baptizer, John the Baptist, and him being beheaded, or he wears the head of a jackal. All of this is, you know, and when you really, as you say, look into it and do the research, these are stories that have been plagiarized, taken by the West, rewritten, and then literalized. The literalists have made these stories literal when they were never intended to be literal, but here is the problem. Because it's so deeply ingrained into the soul part of our being, into our core, that, and I don't want to steer the conversation in this direction, but fear-based religions, as I wrote this morning, we're afraid we're going to go to hell. We're afraid that we're going to die. We don't know that we are infinite beings. We don't know that we've had previous lives. They took these doctrines and documents and portions and books and burned them, destroyed them, did away with them, so that they could structure what we now have in terms of our doctrinal dogmas and belief systems.
Most of these books are lost in the Alexandria Library.
Correct. And so, Giovanni, the nation of Israel, if I can steer you in that direction for a moment, because that's a good place to talk about that, because you have three deities here in that name. That is just so obvious. You want to speak to that?
Well, excuse me, I'm having some blackberries. If I sound like if I sound like I'm having a meal, just let me know. I don't know how I sound on the phone.
You're doing okay.
All right, yeah. Is ISIS? Ra is Amun-Ra, and El is the Mithra bull cult. Elohim, Gabriel, Israel, all these angels end in El. This is the Mithra bull cult, E-L-L. So you got three Egyptian names in Israel. It's there. Isis, Ra, and El. There's no denying it. They're there. There's three ancient Egyptian names in a word that's supposed to be Jewish. Now, why? It's there. It's there for all to see. And if you want to take it internally, you would say that Isis is the pineal gland, Ra is the pituitary gland, and El is higher consciousness. This is all mythology. Joseph Campbell knew it. Carl Jung knew it. Many of our mystics know this, and they've talked about it all their lives.
Leonardo da Vinci knew it.
Michelangelo put it in the Sistine Chapel in his paintings.
Correct.
So people can see the pituitary and the pineal and the brain and the chakra system. It's all on the wall. The pine cone in the Vatican represents the pineal gland. But, you know, like I said, these things are there for those who are open to see it. The Freemason saying is those who have eyes to see, those who have ears to hear. If everybody opens up at different times. They didn't deliberately hide it. There's good and bad in the Vatican. There's yin and yang in all organizations, but you know it's all there for everybody to see. Even Washington D.C., all the alignments, all the architecture, all the statues. It's all there for everybody to see. And if you're ready. And you have the intelligence, and the right hemisphere of your brain is active, you will open and you will see that what you've been taught in school, in Christianity, is 100% wrong. Everything is wrong. It's time to question everything that you were taught. That is the first step. And like Buddha said, like the quote I said in the beginning, you know, you don't believe in anything. You just follow your inner self, you do your research, and you follow your heart, and the universe will open up to you.
Well, you know, back again to the ale and the Mithra bull cult, ale, El Toro, the bull, or El Elohim, El Olam, or El Shaddai, El Roi, El Michael, Uriel, Gabriel, Raphael, and then you have a pineal in your brain, which is
everything
the
that ends
pineal gland, or the pineal gland. It's right there in front of your face. If you listen to the words, what they've done is, as you just stated a moment ago, is not hide this, but it's right in plain sight for those who have eyes to see. And
exactly.
It hides and cloaks a wonderful process that takes place in the body. I saw something wonderful. Elijah today tried to send me something, but it couldn't download, that talked about the 33 vertebrae and the crystals. You want to talk a little bit about that? I mean, when we are staring this kind of information in the face, and this is so factual, and it agrees with natural law. Who the heck do we think created natural law? So, I mean, who made the human body? And who structured it? Who ordered the functionings of it? And we pay no attention to it. We've been steered away from this internal, wondrous, glorious process within us to look externally outside of us, and we have to question why. Now, Lodja, tell us a little bit about that piece you sent me earlier today.
Yeah, I'm trying to get it to come up right now. You know, we have the issue with it being a private viewing there. But it talks about that the 33 vertebrae is where the serpent goes up.
The Christos, which is the Christ, which is the cerebrospinal fluid that descends, as the book of Ephesians says, Christ descended. And who is he that ascended but he that first descended and went into the lower parts of the earth, which is your body. And it goes into the lower gland, which is the cochral gland, or down in the sacrum area. And there's a gland down there like a sponge. And that's the lower part of the earth, the Bible calls Sodom and Gomorrah, because it's sulfuric and acidic. All of this collects in this gland. All goes through there. That comes down from the cerebral, actually from the colostrum, and comes down the spine, and goes, and it's carrying a frequency, a vibration, an electrical magnetic frequency. And it carries this frequency in electromagnetism to every part of your body. And then there's a seed formed, as we've said a million times, in the solar plexus of the human body. every month. And that seed is then baptized or cast into the circulation. Goes, comes down. We have to return that seed. That seed has to be saved. That is the light. That light is carrying. That energy, that force is within us. It has to be returned. It cannot be expelled in sexual expression or destroyed through the chemical processes of abuse, the things we do to our bodies, and chemicals. And that's kind of hard now because we're all on drugs right now. We have GMOs. We have GMOs.
Yeah.
And we're breathing particles, and our water is fluoridated and has lead in it.
Corn
and
syrup and everything.
And so,
oh, yeah, they
and
got
so
you.
That fluid or that oil comes back up the 33 vertebrae, and it gets to a place where the vagus nerve crosses, and right there at the vagus nerve that comes from the pineal body and the pituitary body that crosses right there at the medulla oblongata, it intensifies the frequency of vibratory capacity of this oil 1,000 times. And then that oil is placed on the pineal gland, pineal gland, and it causes it to vibrate with a higher rate of electromagnetism, increasing the EEG amperage, so that now right brain activation is possible. That is the story of Christ in the scripture in a nutshell.
I found it.
And so the 12 disciples are the 12 cranial nerves.
Right.
Yes, they are.
And the oil or the Christ is within you. The oil, that's what Christ is, Christos. You look it up. You know,
and he says that's the resurrection.
And at
rebirth.
It's good that we're talking about this during the Easter holiday because
correct.
It's a perfect time to talk about it because people are focusing in on this crucifixion and resurrection thing.
Mm.
And this is a good time of year to actually talk about it because people are focusing in on it.
But they don't tell you why the resurrection moves from March to April. Why the date keeps shifting?
Yeah, I've always wondered that one.
Let me throw that up to you a little bit here. Easter is basically the time of sun worship. I mean, it's part of the pagan traditions. Way before Christianity came around. You know, the time when the sun brings forth new life throughout the earth as it ascends to sit at the right hand of God. You know, because the sun right ascends. And that's when Jesus said, I sit at the right hand of the Father. The sun right ascends in the eastern sky in the summer for the sun to come back to life and give new birth. Just like the Kundalini rises up the solar plexus, is the reason why it's called the solar plexus. And it goes up and activates the right hemisphere of the brain. What happens in the sky happens in our body, as above, so below.
Mm-hmm.
So when Jesus said many times, you know, he said the disciples weren't catching any fish. So he said, cast your nets on the right side and you will catch a lot of fish. They were, you know, it never really happened. They weren't fishing. Jesus wasn't with his disciples in a boat. This is allegory, complete allegory. I sit at the right hand of the Father. I put the sheep on the right, and I put the goats on the left. This is mentioned throughout the Bible. And this has to do with endocrinology. Endocrinology. It has to do with inner alchemy. And like I said before, you know, guys, you know, I mean, we can't judge Christians. We can't judge evangelicals because they were never taught this. I mean, they're probably listening to this right now, and they have no friggin' idea what we're talking about. It's a slow process. It's a slow process, and we can't judge them. We just have to throw them seeds and make them open up. Because, you know, I mean, just think about it. Can you imagine an evangelical Christian right now listening to this?
Yeah.
Just think about it. I mean, even, you know, even Pat Robertson.
They will call you names. Trust me.
Yes.
Oh,
not a name for a document.
They can't absorb any of this stuff, and
We as teachers, I mean, I've always fell in a trap of yelling at them and judging them and putting them down, but it was wrong, and I'm the first person to admit that. You know, I've had a bad temper with them. I've lost my temper many times with them, but you can't. Because a true teacher is just to plant seeds and to understand that people are growing. And this is a slow process. And as the age of Aquarius is leaving Pisces and we're entering a new age, more and more people are going to open. The energies are going to get more powerful, and people are going to be more privy to this knowledge. And we as teachers have to always be there to plant the seeds.
I want to pause right there and bring in a great friend of mine, colleague. His name is Steger. And, Stig, are you there? I think I'm unmuting your mic. 214, Stig, is that you?
Yes, sir.
Now, are you listening? Are you listening? Now, you and I share a Christian background. I think you were second, third, maybe even fourth generation. I don't know. Preacher, right?
Correct. Sixth-generation pastor.
Sixth-generation
pastor.
Wow. Now, you know, coming from that background, how do you find yourself in a room like this with this discussion? How does it make you feel?
It's a miracle, isn't it? It's a miracle.
Yeah.
It's a miracle that we're here together talking about these things.
Yeah, probably... maybe a year and a half ago, I would have like, Ollie, I just blasphemers.
Yeah.
But now, I understand.
God bless you.
I'm beginning to understand more and more. It started with me asking questions of myself, to myself, about the Bible itself. I mean... As more and more, as I studied history more and more and stopped looking at Western history but started studying world history, I'm like, this ain't lining up. And if it's real, it's got to line up. I mean, it needs to be, dates need to be factual and exact, and it's just not lining up for me. And so that's what led into the search.
You're walking the path, and that's good.
Yes,
nephew and I, we've been walking together now. I don't know how long. He's just written a book where parents lead, children will follow, and that's available on Amazon.com. A great book with great principles, I believe he's on the line tonight. He's listening to this as well. And, you know, he and I have gone back and forth through the years because we basically started together. I'm his uncle, but I'm a little older than he is, just a little bit. And but we've walked in this message for the last, since 2011, when I started to awaken. Now, Ernest, brother, Chancellor, have you listened to these preachers, this preacher, sixth-generational preacher, tell you about his search into history and finding out that some things don't line up? Does it?
Yeah.
You know, when I actually found this out, and I tell you this all the time, it hurts. Doesn't it hurt?
Yes.
Yeah.
And for lack of a better expression, please excuse the vernacular, but it pissed me off.
That's what I told Giovanni earlier. It pissed me off. Bill Downey, you pissed me off. And I said, oh, he's going to hell.
Yeah, that's what they love to tell you. You're going to hell. They're very judgmental. Because you know why you're going to hell? Because you don't believe that a man was assassinated 2,000 years ago, and because God committed a blood sacrifice, a human sacrifice, and we don't believe that he died, that's why we're going to hell. Christianity is founded on blood and gore and human sacrifice when it was never supposed to be that way. The Son gets crucified in the Southern Cross during the winter solstice. It spends 3 days and 3 nights in the tomb of the earth, and then rises back up and gets resurrected. This is complete astrology, astronomy. And what happens in the sky happens with the kundalini going up the spine. It was never meant to be taken literally. So, you know, God would never, I mean, don't you think that God would find better ways to bring his people closer to him besides murdering some guy on a cross? This is ridiculous. I never heard of such ridiculousness. And when I was a child, my parents used to take me to Catholic, you know, the Sunday school, I mean, the church on Sunday, and I was 7, 8 years old, and I used to look up and see this poor man on the cross, all full of blood. It was like an R-rated movie. I used to have nightmares. Is this what God's all about? Is this love? The guy
that
hanging there on a cross, murdered, tortured?
That is to instill and to strike fear. See?
Yeah.
Torment.
And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe what I was seeing at 7 years old. And I was open, even at seven. And I used to ask the priest, I used to say, why did God do this to this guy? What's going on here? This is blood sacrifice. I thought only Satanists do this.
Well, you know, when you actually, as Steger said just a moment ago, when you study history and you go back to the vicarious doctrines or dogmas of the substitutionary death of Christ, you can pinpoint actually in the history at a council where this concept of the substitute, now listen to this word, the word tells all, substitutionary vicarious suffering. This is a substitute program. Substitute for what? The substitutionary vicarious suffering is what we believe because of a council that was called by the Romans. And
Council of Nicaea.
Decided, the Council of Nicaea, 325 AD, correct, and decided to come up with the Apostles' Creed. And these doctrinal dogmas. But who are these people? And why did they come up with this doctrine 300 years in the 4th century after this guy lived? What did the people believe for the first 300 years?
I can tell you where these people came from. This was all planned. This was all literalized to get the state of Israel. And in a little while, I'll explain to you why this all leads to the formation of the state of Israel in 1948. It was all because of that. Christianity is Zionism's greatest tool.
Yep.
It's Zionism's greatest tool. And this has all been purposely planned to get the state of Israel. And when you guys are ready, I'll be happy to explain that to you.
Take off. We're listening.
Yep.
Well,
ready.
By literalizing the entire Bible of a people called Israelites leaving Egypt and going to the Red Sea and God's chosen people and going to Israel, that's how they became powerful on this planet. That's how people who call themselves Jews today became powerful, because they literalized the whole story. They wanted all to pertain to them. Now they're waiting for a Messiah to come back, so they can crown Israel the capital of the world, and everybody bows down to Israel, and they're the one world government, and they're the chosen people, and Jesus sits on the throne, and all the countries bow down to them, and that's the end of that. They got it. Their plan, their millennium plan, has come to a close.
They're running into a severe roadblock.
Yes, they are because the knowledge that. The alchemical knowledge is starting to come out. The universe is starting to tell people that, no, the Bible is not literal.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus said that the kingdom of heaven lies within us. What I'm saying by Jesus, I'm talking about the character in the story. I don't necessarily tell you that there's a man named Jesus who said it. All right, it's just part of the character of the story. So I want to get that clear with you guys. You know, just like, you know,
if Cinderella said something, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But what I'm trying to, Jesus made it very clear. He was once asked when the kingdom of God would come. He said, Jesus replied, it's not something people will be able to see and point to. Then came these striking words, neither doth they say, lo here or lo there, for behold, the kingdom of heaven is within you. But yet people are going, people have their eyes on Israel when Jesus said, no. Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is within you. Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is not an external place. He said this many, many times, and born-again Christians do just the opposite. Born-again Christians do just the opposite. There was a time when Jesus was talking to his disciples on a mountain, and he said, looking over Jerusalem, and he said, do you see all these great buildings? They asked Jesus, and Jesus says, don't even bother looking at them. Not one stone will be left on another because everything will be thrown down. He said, my kingdom is not an earthly kingdom. If it were, my followers, if it were, my followers would fight to keep me from being handed over to the Jewish leaders, but my kingdom is not of this world. He said, my kingdom does not come with observation. And I really hope that Christian, evangelical Christians are listening to this tonight, because if they really believe and if they really want to follow Jesus, they ought to listen to his words and not listen to these pastors on TBN. Jesus was against the physical state of Israel. He was against the physical kingdom. He said it was in us. And this is the most important thing that all Christians have to learn, to have to understand. And you know, Jesus said he's not coming back neither. They're all waiting for him to come back. But let me tell you something. In John 14, 20, I believe, it says, after a little while, the world will no longer see me, but you will see me. Because I live, you will live also. In that day, you will know that I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you. He who has my commandments and keeps them is the one who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him, and I will disclose myself to him. Jesus said he's going to come back in you. The Christ consciousness is going to come
back.
Let me bring
in a pastor from Ohio, one of our chancellors. Yes, your mic is open. Talk.
I just want this question to be answered or even discussed. That America is a Christian country. America is a Christian country. We look towards Israel to be our ideally friend, who, if we understand the scripture says, that the scripture says he came to his own and his own received him not. So how does Israel look towards us as we claim a Christ who has come and has died and has resurrected, and they are still looking for the Christ to come and place them in rule? How do they look at us, and how do we look towards them to say they are our friend, and we have their Christ already that has come, died, and resurrected?
Well, first of all, the United States is not a Christian country.
That's true.
This country was not built on Christianity.
Sure
well,
was.
Many of our most prominent founding fathers were Freemasons and deists, and they all believed in the separation of church and state. Yes, they were born, they were Anglo-Saxons, they were Anglo-Saxon Protestants born in the Christian faith, yes, but it doesn't mean that they necessarily followed it. Our founding fathers did not want a totalitarian theocracy. They wanted a country where all people, all men can come here and practice their faith in freedom without any one religion being the state religion. It was Christian revisionism later on that tried to push Christianity on this country. Okay, but our founding fathers were mystics. They were mystics.
Correct.
They didn't follow Christianity. As a matter of fact, if you Google them, they talk against Christianity. They talk against religion. So now we have a Republican Party that has totally been taken over by the evangelical Christian right, trying to put down Muslims, but yet it's the Christians that are trying to force their views on other people. It's the Christians that want to force everything on other people.
True.
I don't see any Muslim Americans proselytizing. I don't see any Buddhists and Hindus. I don't even see Jews proselytizing. I've seen born-again evangelical Christians trying to make this country a totalitarian theocracy. These are the ones that I feel that are the problem in this country and in the world. So, you know, when born-again Christians say that this is a Christian country, this is they're not, they have not educated themselves on the true founding of this republic. They'll never mention Freemasonry to you. Now, the next time a born-again Christian says to you that this is the Christian country, say, look at that obelisk in Washington, D.C. Is that a cross? If this was a Christian country, that obelisk would be a gigantic cross, would it not? But it's not. There is not one Jesus statue. There is not one Christian cross on federal government property. Not one. It's all ancient Egyptian alchemy.
And it's a phallic symbol.
And well, a phallic symbol means, you know, it's sexuality is connection is connected to the pineal gland. It's all connected. Sexuality is all part of the raising of the kundalini, so yes. The obelisk points to Cyrus, and Cyrus is basically the, you know, the eastern star. The three belts of Orion follow it as the sun rises up. You know, the birth of Christ, the sun. It's all astronomical, and it's all pointed to Cyrus.
And let's talk a little bit about Easter. We touched on it. Let's rewind just for a moment. Because
sure.
The sun passed over the equator, and we went into the spring equinox. And what's going to happen on the Earth at this time is that the Earth now will generate from the heating up of the sun coming back over into the northern hemisphere. And I've not been able to articulate why the northern hemisphere, but Santo Bonacci does, as well as Bill Donahue, why the northern hemisphere is important. But the sun
the east. It goes up to the northern hemisphere to the east, right?
Right, correct.
Just like, you know, the Bible talks about the tribe of Judah camped out to the east.
Correct.
You know, it's all
correct.
Part of the... You know, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the sun passes over. Here's your Passover. The sun passes over the equator, and the earth experiences a resurrection. Trees,
that's right.
Flowers, farmers start to plant their seed. The earth
that's
now
right.
has the heat or the
everything
energy.
Is alive. Everything is alive again.
Comes out of the winter. Comes out of the winter solstice. Comes out of the winter grip. The refrigerator, I call it. And everything now is having a resurrection. And as the sun keeps ascending, it goes up to its highest point in terms of its reach to the earth. And it reaches the most high in Cancer. And we have the longest day in the year. And then it begins to sit down at the right hemisphere in Leo, the lion. Here it is, the lion of the tribe of Judah, Revelation 5 and 5.
I'll break it down for you here. I got my notes. First of all, Jesus, the word Jesus, in Greek, if you broke it down in Greek, the numerical value is 888. And 888 in Greek is the mythical son. So Jesus wasn't named Jesus because of Yeshua or Joshua. That's not true. Jesus is a made-up Greek name, which numerical value is 888, which means the mythical son. This is fact. Christians can yell and scream about it all they want. This is a historical fact. This
wow.
is what the Greek Hellenists in Alexandria did. They made Jesus. They put Jesus in the place of the sun. Okay, so it doesn't mean Joshua. Okay, so we look at the movement of the sun of God going through the 12 constellation signs, which is the Bible, which in the Bible the 12 disciples, and in your head is the 12 cranial nerves. Because remember what I said earlier: what happens above a above, what happens below? Well, not only do you have 12 constellations in the sky, but you have 12 cranial nerves in your head. We are the microcosm of the macrocosm. What happens in nature outside happens within us. Okay, so this is how the sun starts its journey. The virgin birth. The sun is born of a virgin on the ninth month, September, which is Virgo. It's crucified during the winter solstice, December 21st, as the sun descends to the constellation Crux, the Southern Cross. There's your crucifixion now. The sun crucifies itself by going through the Crux, the constellation Crux. You can look it up. It's part of astronomy. It's called the Southern Cross. The sun crucifies itself. It's in the tomb for 3 days and three nights. Jesus is in the tomb for 3 days and three nights, right? In the tomb of the solstice is 3 days and three nights, December 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. Coincidence? No. Begins the resurrection to the new birth. It's reborn out of the solstice on the 25th. So it's not Jesus' birthday. It's got nothing to do with a man named Jesus, a guy with a beard. Okay? Aquarius, the water man in baptism. January 21st to February 18th, the sun enters the sign of the waterman Aquarius. Right? Jesus enters the water of John the Baptist. So far, Jesus is following the sun in every single detail of the story. After that, Pisces the fish and the disciple the fishermen. February 19th to March 20th, the sun enters the sign of Pisces. Jesus selects his disciples from what? The fishermen. Aries the ram. On March 21st to April 19th, the sun enters the sign of Aries the ram. The sun that takes
the
away
Passover,
the darkness.
The sacrifice.
Jesus becomes the Lamb of God that takes away the sins of the world.
Brings us out
June
of the
21st,
cold of winter.
June 21st is the summer solstice. The sun sits at the east or the right side. June 21st, the summer solstice, the longest day of the year, the sun sits at the right hand or eastern side. Jesus ascends to sit at the right hand of the Father. The sun ends its journey. It concludes its journey in the sign of Leo, the lion. Jesus concludes his ministry in the Lion of Judah. That is the
in
life
all
of Jesus.
All of his strength and glory and brilliance. And summer
That's
is
right.
the hottest month.
That is your sun god, S-U-N, not S-O-N. That is why the sun god has his name Jesus.
I want to pause.
The sun must go. To the Crux, the cross, or there can be no spring. If the sun does not get crucified in the constellation Crux, there can be no spring. That is why the sun god must be crucified and must rise out of the tomb of the earth on Easter Sunday. The sun
wow.
must sit at the eastern sky in June, or there can be no summer. This is astronomy. That is why all new life comes forth when the sun god ascends to sit at the right hand of the Father. Jesus
wow.
is the mythical sun god, which controls all of the aspects of life on earth. The year of
now,
the sun.
Now, I want Giovanni. I want to bring the sixth generational preacher back in.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
And I want to bring the chancellor back in from Ohio. Let me say that the Jordan Maxwell gives a wonderful dissertation. You can look him up about Israel and the moon cult in Mount Sinai
mm-hmm.
and why. Why, now listen to this carefully, why the day keeps changing between March and April as far as Easter is concerned. Because it's based upon astrology, people. Listen, it's based upon the first moon after the sun passed, the first full moon, after the sun passes over the equator. So obviously the date keeps changing because the full moon keeps changing after the sun passes over the equator. So sometimes it's in March, sometimes it's in April. So this, how do you feel about this, Steve? How do you feel about this, Chancellor, that this date keeps moving? How do you answer someone to satisfy good sense and tell them, okay, if someone asks you, why is this date moving? What do you tell them? Is his death? Because if his resurrection is changing, that means the day that he died is changing. He is risen 3 days after he's crucified. So if his resurrection is moving from month to month and weeks apart, that means the day he died is moving days apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how do you answer that, C? Are you there?
Yeah. to be honest, I've never had anyone ask me until I ask myself.
And then I myself, I come to from a place is that I celebrate my birthday the 26th of November every year. However, it falls on different days. That's the first thing. Second thing is that when we have a memorial for anybody, whatever day that memorial day falls in that calendar, it shifts. But I think we're not trying to hold the day. We're not trying to hold the day. I think we're emphasizing the memorial, then we are emphasizing the day. So that's the reason why I don't think it's an argument, because we are memorializing the event, the sacrifice, and not the day.
You want to address that, Giovanni?
Let me get you off speakerphone so you can hear me. Hold on.